same old show for the most part. Josh is traveling. He's still going to be on the show, I promise you guys. Things look different around here. It's all good. You guys know Jacob from the Waiver Wire show. You guys know him from all the writing he does. One of the best analysts in the game. Honored to have his five guys that he can't stop drafting over on Best Ball. This also is going to matter over at Yahoo as well. The first name, we disagree, and it's in the top, 10 or so picks. Ashton Jeanty, tell me why you're on him.
Yeah, so this is probably my biggest stand in the first round. He currently goes right at the 1-2 turn. I have him ranked 8th overall in my Best Ball rankings on both Underdog and DraftKings, which you can find over on Thinking About Thinking. And largely this just comes down to the fact that I think of all of the running backs going after those very consensus top four, he is the one guy that I am most confident in having just an all around every single box checked part of the role in terms of I see a pathway for him to get a ton of receptions. I see a pathway for him to get a ton of carries, and I don't see any sort of backfield competition on him for goal line work. Probably, I'm guessing, the area of biggest disagreement from you, because I know you've been a little bit lower on him this year, is just what is the touchdown upside on the Las Vegas Raiders? And I think that's where I'm putting a lot of faith in Kubiak, and I'm putting a decent chunk of faith in the combination of Cousins and Mendoza to at least reach competence. And I'm putting faith in a improved personnel and health on the offensive line. Like for me, looking at last year, I also thought the Raiders would be more competent than they ended up being. I didn't know that Chip Kelly was going to be calling out plays that weren't in the play sheet from the box. I think Kubiak is going to be a little bit more locked in than Kelly and Carroll and company were. There's no longer a nepotism factory running the offensive line. And I also think they had basically two offensive linemen that to me were worth a crap on their team last year. One of them was playing out of position all year and got hurt. The other one also got hurt basically immediately. So hopefully we get Miller, JPJ back healthy. Linderbaum is going to be a massive addition to the interior of the offensive line, even if he was probably way overpaid. He's going to still be easily better than anyone that was playing in their interior last year. And so I think it's going to be reasonably functional. And with that, I'm just banking on like 300 carries and 80 targets for Ashton Jeanty in a Clint Kubiak design run game that I expect to be pretty darn competent.
Yeah, and that was a flawless argument. I really can't like nitpick any of that stuff. Like to me, it is just the like upside for touchdowns. Like Saquon Barkley can have a similar season. I do think the differentiator is just the receptions versus Saquon, Derrick Henry, those types out there, and then Devon Achane, James Cook, Kenneth Walker. I would guess that they're going to have fewer all around touches, and like those are the guys that he's competing with. So like he's one of the highest floor backs there is, because like, I mean, Mike Washington's not going to get in there and get too involved. Like the touches are going to be there. I think he's a round 1-2 turn pick. To me, I was like, could Saquon have like the Saquon season? I think like maybe that percentile outcome is probably just a gear that Jeanty can't hit right now, unless I'm like really low on what his actual skill set is. I thought he was like fine as a rookie, but I did not see like, this is Bijan Robinson. This is Jahmyr Gibbs. You know, this is Saquon Barkley. I see more like this is Josh Jacobs, like totally fine. Hopefully he's more than that. Obviously, like this is a range of outcomes things, and there very well could be a case that he's much better than the Josh Jacobs tier that I kind of had him in based off of his first year in the league.
I think there's a little more juice there. I thought he was better than his numbers showed. Like consistently, I felt like when I would watch Raiders games, which wasn't very fun, I always came away thinking like, man, like Jeanty looks pretty good. And then I'd look up, it's 12 carries for 31 yards. And I thought a lot of that was just him getting met in the backfield immediately. Most of the times that I thought he had poor runs where he was causing his own inefficiency, I thought it was fixable errors. I thought it was him knowing he was in this crappy situation, trying to do too much, making too many risky decisions. I feel like that stuff is pretty common with rookie running backs generally, especially ones who I think understand that they kind of have to take big home run swings, because grinding out 3 yards at a time going the way the play is designed just isn't going to be effective. So I give him a lot of grace from his rookie season. I don't know that he'll ever have like the breakaway type of runs that you see out of a Saquon Barkley, out of a Jahmyr Gibbs. He was still a guy that was top 15 missed tackles forced per attempt. I thought that was his calling card as a prospect. I still thought that showed up consistently week to week. So I think he is somewhere in between the Josh Jacobs tier and like the Jahmyr Gibbs tier from a talent perspective. But I think the reception upside that he had earlier on in his college profile. I still think that can show up. I especially think it can show up when you look at the Vegas pass catching depth chart, which is like Brock Bowers and just a total bunch of guys. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be pretty easy to find creative ways to get the ball in Genty's hands.
Yeah. The one stat that I gave for Genty to like show his upside case is when he was not contacted behind the line of scrimmage, his missed tackles per carry was 0.29. The league average is 0.16. So he almost doubled up the league average when he wasn't getting contacted. I do think there is like, it's just like simple like statistics. Like if you're in a really terrible situation, you're going to be making errors because you're trying to get yourself out of this situation. Like you just know, like I'm in a bad situation. I need to do whatever I can. You're going to have more errors and like, hey, I'm in a great situation. I can just like play this thing cleanly. And I do think that we should expect Genty to take like a bigger leap just with the Raiders hopefully looking competent this year. And I do think there will be a competent offense. Like I don't have that many worries with Ash and Genty. I just liked maybe the Saquon Barkley and the Kenneth Walker kind of upside, but really tough decisions up at the top there. Lots of running backs at the 1-2 turn this year, and we have to make sure
running
we're
backs,
getting them right.
They're so yep. back.
They're big time back. Now I'm gonna have to go to full PPR brain over at Yahoo. So like, you guys start seeing me have some like different discussions here. Like, give me a month, kind of reset my perspective here. But I know most of the leagues on Yahoo are PPR, so expect me to change my tune a little bit. All right, this one, I'm looking for people to not be in on this guy, Colston Loveland in the fourth round. It seems like he's the guy that like everyone, if he was in the third round, like everyone would be like, I still really like him. So tell me why you're specifically on him and like how you rank him versus Luther Burden, because they're pretty much going back to back.
They are. And I am a pretty big Luther Burden fan, but I've found it very difficult to draft him because I think that his better teammate goes right behind him in Colston Loveland. He is my most drafted tight end. He was also my most drafted tight end in pre-draft contests. He is, I think, currently my third most drafted player overall. So he's a guy that I've been, you know, especially when it comes to tight end, almost building my draft strategy around having a significantly above market position too. He was also my favorite player in the entire 2025 draft at any position, fantasy or otherwise. I think he's just an absolute stud. Brings a level of blocking upside that maybe he didn't consistently reach, but that he can credibly play in line in 12 personnel. But also, I thought more than Tyler Warren, more than anyone in this tight end class, he's a guy that you can just isolate against a DB and legitimately win on slants, digs, and on basically one of the most important plays of the Bears 2025 season, that 2-point play against the Green Bay Packers. They just ran a complete clear out, isolation, James Harden type of route for Colston Loveland on an island against the DB. He won easily, gets him that 2-point play. They took both rookies pretty slow last year, but Loveland was the one of the two that actually did eventually get to play a true full-time role. And unlike Burden, where his efficiency actually declined a little bit as he got more and more routes, Loveland really rose to the occasion because it was the last 5 weeks he basically became a full-time player. And in the last four games, he goes 6 for 94 and 1, 10 for 91 and 1, 8 for 137 in that playoff game, and then 4 for 56 in the final playoff game that he missed some snaps in with protocol. Overall, rookie season, 1.97 yards per route run, absolutely elite for a tight end, borderline elite for a rookie wide receiver. And I don't see any path for the Bears to not give him a near 100% snap rate this year, because if you've looked at their wide receiver depth chart, it is Luther Burden, Roma Dunze, and like absolute nobodies. So I'm expecting them to lead the NFL in 12 personnel rate, 13 personnel rate pretty comfortably. I think their base grouping is going to be those three guys and Cole Kmet, who doesn't earn a whole lot of targets.
Yep.
That's going to be a really strong environment for those top three pass catchers to consolidate volume. And to me, he's the one from like a pedigree perspective, from a high-end efficiency in a full-time role data perspective, and just from a tape perspective, that I think is the best player of the three and I think should be the focal point of their entire offense. So if I was betting on any tight end this year, outside of the top two, you know, to be the tight end one overall, I think it's Loveland. And honestly, If you made me, I might even draft them ahead of Trey McBride. So yep. I'm a pretty huge fan of his.
I see it the same way. I mean, if it was back-to-back Trey McBride and Colson Loveland, like in the middle of round three, I would like really have to sit there and debate that. So we're getting a discount from that. Like you said, like the last four games, including the playoffs, like those games are humongous. He had 18 expected half PPR points. Remember, he's 21 years old. Like this just does not happen. I see the same thing. I think he like somewhat looks as flexible as like Travis Kelce out in the route. And that is amazing for somebody as young as he was. And like you said, it was like 3x1 sets. He's isolated over there and the ball is just going directly to him. There's like really no negative notes I can come up with. Colson Loveland's going to get better as a blocker and he's already plenty good enough. And I thought actually a plus as a blocker as well. So, I mean, they drafted him 10th overall last year. That was Ben Johnson's first pick. So I really do think that he should be a full round ahead of Luther Burden. I think he is underpriced. And I think especially in PPR redraft where you have to pick the tight end and you have to choose which tight end you're going to start. You're not just doing best ball touchdown variants. I would rather spend the premium picks on the tight ends in redraft leagues because like if he's getting 8 targets per game, like you want those 8 targets. You don't want to be doing touchdown coin flips in redraft league where you're okay with it in best ball. So like my full PPR rankings and redraft are going to have Colson Loveland really highly. Like right now, if you were just like, this is where he should be going. Like what number overall do you think that even is?
Yeah. So, I mean, I have him ahead of market, even like in underdog half PPR best ball, which is the worst format for him. Part of that is why I think the cost is more depressed there. But yeah, if we're talking like a full PPR redraft format, and I haven't published rankings for that yet, but I think I'll probably have him somewhere in like the middle of the third round. Like yeah, if you're saying full PPR redraft managed where I'm starting my tight end every week, it's like, would I rather have, I don't know, like, would I rather have Chris Olave or Colson Loveland? Would I rather have Zay Flowers or Colson Loveland? Like that's where I'm starting to have that conversation. Yep. And I, you know, likewise, the running back, would I rather have Kyren Williams or Colson Loveland, Javonte Williams or Colson Loveland? I'm already making some hard decisions. So I think I'll have him substantially above market in those formats.
Okay. We see that one the same. All right. Let's do a couple wide receivers back to back. I'll let you choose which one you're more fired up with.
I'll go Josh Downs. I'll be a homer. So Josh Downs this year, the big debate I feel like has been, will he finally play in two wide receiver sets? Because last year, tapered off in his per route metrics from his really impressive 2024. He still led the team in targets per route run when he was on the field. But after drafting Tyler Warren, they went to a lot more 12 personnel than they previously had. Josh Downs was never playing in those sets, and it completely zapped him of anything more than flex level upside. My case going into this year is that I actually don't think it matters as much as people think about the specifics of the two wide receiver sets, because I simply don't believe that Shane Steichen is going to consistently call pass plays with his 5 eligible receivers being Jonathan Taylor, Alec Pierce, Tyler Warren, one of Ashton Doolin or Nick Westbrook-Akeem,
oh God,
and one of Mo Alie-Cox or Ogletree. Like that just doesn't strike me as something that Steichen, who I think is pretty smart, is willing to do. So I think it's a pretty easy call. Either they're going to play Downs on the outside in 12 personnel passing plays, or they're going to run way more 11 personnel this year in their passing plays, which is what they did in 2023 and 2024 when Josh Downs looked like a breakout candidate in the first place. It's just pretty obvious to me that when it comes to man beating, route winner, that obviously now without Michael Pittman, Josh Downs is kind of the guy for that. They might have paid Alec Pierce to be an all-around wide receiver. I still think he's best suited as a deep threat plus, not a true 10 targets per game guy. Mm-hmm. And Tyler Warren, I think so far, is at his best when he's able to work off of the run game. So if I look at which player on this team is actually best calibrated from a skill set perspective to walk in and take a lot of what Michael Pittman leaves behind, to me, that's Josh Downs. So I value him as highly as basically any wide receiver after what I see is a pretty staunch drop off, like in the Rome Odunze, Jordan Tyson, Marvin Harrison range. And he goes all the way back towards the 8-9 turn. I think he'd be perfectly fine going in like round 7, you know, with guys like DK Metcalf, guys like Jaden Reed coming up. And I prefer him straight up to Alec Pierce, especially if we're talking full PPR. Okay. So,
all right. I like that call. Yeah. The, the stuff in three wide receiver sets for over the last 2 years, he's the wide receiver 27 per route in three wide receiver sets, like specifically where it's obviously harder to get yarded because you're competing with other receivers versus a tight end. So like the fact that like he's still a top 30 NFL wide receiver, and that gives you like the talent upside. And if he does play in two wide receiver sets, how the math works is that was 8 extra routes per game last year. If you were going to copy paste the exact personnel breakdown, that would be about 2 extra targets per game, 15 extra yards per game for Josh Downs. Like that puts him in like the flex conversation in full PPR. So like you said, like they might not use 12 personnel as much this year, or Josh Downs hopefully should graduate into it. I think there would be some limitations you'd be sacrificing if he's out there in two wide receiver sets. I personally would be fine with some of those limitations and deal with it. And I agree with you on the Pierce and like Tyler Warren of it all. I think that those are great players in isolation for exactly what they're doing. But beyond that, I do think there's enough middle ground for Josh Downs. Plus, Alec Pierce, I'm hopeful that his rehab is going to continue and just be A-okay. Could he have a setback? And then at that point, you really can't tell me it's Nick Westbrook, Akina, and I forgot who the other wide receiver that would be in there. Do you say it was Ashton Doolin?
Oh yeah, team mascot Ashton Doolin. has been a starter throughout the summer.
Well, it can't be those two guys in two wide receiver sets and 12 personnel. I mean, we'll get canceled. I mean, that's insane. So like, I do think there's like this like very real Alec Pierce upside in here, and I think that even if Alec Pierce was the exact same Alec Pierce high paid player, I still think there's room for Josh Down in full PPR to be kind of in the mix for like flex play. Interesting player. I think this is the year that he's going to actually graduate. Like him versus Jaden Reed, like these two guys, like the same exact player.
Yeah.
Do you like Downs more than Jaden Reed?
I have Reed ranked ahead because I'm like ADP sensitive, but at the exact same cost and in my redraft rankings, when I'm not building out rankings for like a 300 team portfolio, sure, I'll have Downs ahead. So straight up, give me Downs. I just think that the pathway to like a 90% route rate is way clearer with Downs than it is, yes, with Reed. I think it's very possible the team's week one plan is Josh Downs 85 to 90% routes. I think the Reed bet is either like crushing it from 65 to 70% of routes,
yeah,
or it's Matthew Golden or falls Christian apart. Watson gets hurt, yeah, slash Matthew Golden busts, and then they call an audible and Reed, yeah, gets to play there. But yeah,
Reed's, it's almost the exact same conversation. I think Downs' odds of being in two wide receiver sets are higher. I think Jaden Reed's like efficiency floor is a little higher just because of that offense. I was looking at the same three wide receiver set yards per route run last 2 years. Jaden Reed's 10th in the NFL in yards per route run out of three wide receiver sets, which is really impressive. So both those guys, pretty interesting this year. Scrolling down the board, your next wide receiver, Casey Concepcion. Absolutely loved him as a prospect. Obviously, the big con, Cleveland Browns. So I'm curious what you're going to say here.
Well, I wrote a lot last two summers about how we've changed wide receiver pricing, especially last year. I wrote about the changes in rookie wide receiver pricing. And one of the refrains I constantly mentioned was, you know, we're simply never going to get another opportunity like we got in 2022 when Garrett Wilson was, for my money, the best wide receiver prospect in the draft and winds up being drafted in round 11 because he goes to this horrendous New York Jets team, despite potentially being the number one pass catcher on that team. I'm not going to say Casey Concepcion is as good of a prospect as Garrett Wilson was. I don't think that he quite is, but I don't think that the gap is that massive. And we're getting about the same price in a similarly bleak team situation, despite, again, a very good chance that he immediately steps up as the team's number one pass catcher. I think Casey Concepcion profiles as an all-around wide receiver who can play in the slot, can play outside, can function as a deep threat, can function as a yak threat. There's a lot of similarities between him and Zay Flowers, who, yep, under this same offensive regime, had a lot of success for the Baltimore Ravens, was another guy who basically stepped in from week one and was his team's number one pass catcher ahead of a tight end in Mark Andrews. So I'm a pretty big Todd Monken fan. I'm a huge Casey Concepcion fan. And I just think this is a crazy price for a potential round one rookie wide receiver, number one pass catcher. The upside for him is, to me, much greater than kind of everyone going in the group before him, which are like a bunch of number two, number threes who are kind of capped at like 18, 20% target share type guys. This guy has legitimate superstar upside for me.
Yep.
And could be a guy where who knows? Next year, they get a better quarterback situation. He's coming off of a great rookie season. What if he's a round two or round three pick? This might be the only chance you ever get to draft this guy at this cost as like your wide receiver five, wide receiver six. So he's a total auto click for me, where I think you have a pathway to late season production like you always do with rookies, but you're probably just getting a pretty high chance of immediate starting production that's not remotely priced in. So I'm all in on this bet.
Yeah, we see this thing the same way. I think just his college tape, he did all the fun stuff in terms of like manufacturer touches. You can go watch his punt returns as well. Plus he would work down the football field. I thought he showed so much toughness for what his size indicates. And he's 196 pounds. We're not talking like 175 pound player. He really reminded me of Stephon Diggs. And then I also had Zay Flowers written down. And obviously Todd Monken's talked about how similar those two players are to one another. Then we get ESPN reports from this offseason where he's used on deep shots to screens to run plays, which is kind of like the magic mix you're talking about. And I do think on top of that, your basic slant route, dig routes, third and seven situation, I still think that he's going to be better than Jerry Jeudy eventually. So bench stash for sure. It might take a little bit here, but I would be pretty surprised if Casey Concepcion has not established himself as the best wide receiver on the Browns by the end of the year. That's what they drafted him to do. And I think that he has the skill set to kind of do it. So I think it'll be pretty hard to predict which weeks we're going to like want him. So I definitely understand the best ball appeal, but man, like you said, with Garrett Wilson, like I can totally see where it's like, man, he's getting eight targets a game. Like Jerry Jeudy's a clear number two, and that would be a win in redraft as well. Last one here. You've been tweeting about it a lot. People are going to be surprised. Josh and I had just talked about Bill Kroski Merritt. I kind of liked Catron Allen for what he is as a prospect. And then you're on Rashad White here. So explain why we shouldn't care about a 1 year, $2 million contract. And it's time to go in on Rashad White.
Yeah, exactly. Rashad White, who he seems potentially what primed to join your list of guys who have less guaranteed money than the winner of Best Ball Mania. Look, people who have subscribed to my newsletter for years know that I've kind of done a full circle on Rashad White. I really liked him coming out as a prospect because I just viewed him as being a guy that at worst a clearly defined NFL role as a pass catching back, but you also got size with that. And so I always thought, hey, like if he shows to be a more efficient and effective runner in the NFL than I think he is in college, then you get a huge win. And even if not, you kind of always get this guy who's going to have a role with a ton of contingent upside because everything about him is just so fantasy friendly. He has the size for goal line carries. He has the pass blocking ability to play as many snaps as you need him to. He has the receiving ability that's legitimately value adding for fantasy and for an NFL offense. And we've seen that come to fruition. He was legitimately an awesome fantasy pick in 2023. And even as his real life rushing limitations caught up to him, whenever he was called upon for a larger role, he was generally fantasy viable in 2024 and 2025. Going into Washington, I just view him as being the highest floor and highest ceiling pick in this backfield because there's a lot of rushing threat competition between Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt and Catron Allen. Allen being more of a success rate, goal line type running back, and Kroski Merritt being more of a hit and miss, boom bust speed back. White, I think you could make a reasonable case as an inferior runner to either of those, but I wouldn't say that any of those guys are so assured to be entrenched into an effective high volume rushing role that that's completely unavailable for White. What White does bring you is he's legitimately, to me, a top 10 long down and distance back in the whole NFL. He is very good in space, got great hands. He's an effective pass catcher. I think at worst, he's going to play that Austin Eckler role. And what I could see is over the course of the season, if Catron is just not giving you much, which is like a pretty reasonable thing for a day three, round six rookie to not give you. And if JCM continues to be very hit and miss and you're not seeing enough improvement from him as a pass catcher and as a pass blocker, maybe they say, hey, you know what? White's not really what you want to be your lead runner. But if we're not playing a very good lead runner regardless, why don't we just play the guy who keeps our whole playbook open on every play because he can handle all the pass protections. You can throw to him. You can run with him. And he winds up just kind of consolidating snaps to 70-80% snap rate. I don't think that's the most likely, but I think he can pay off his cost-ish as just a pure Austin Ekeler role. And I think you have a ton of upside for him to return more like round three, round four value in the case that he winds up just snap consolidating. The last thing I'll say too is that despite being a very unexplosive runner for a allegedly 4.43 running back, he was top 15 in missed tackles forced per attempt, and he was above the 50th percentile in success rate, both versus in zone runs and especially in gap runs, where he was 10th in the NFL. Also had randomly a top five PFF rush grade last year, which is generally kind of a get what's blocked follows the assignment type grading system. I don't think it's out of the question that the team views him as a better goal line option than JCM. So if Catron doesn't become a huge factor, I think he might be viewed as more reliable, has more size than JCM, and he could just become this high value touch magnet. So I'm pretty in on White, especially in best ball leagues, but like I'll even be drafting him in redraft as an RB3, RB4. So it's kind of fun to be back full circle on a guy that I've dogged a lot over the years, but I'm pretty into this year.
He's like the coach's pet, you know, like these guys are just hard for them to like not have a long career. I have like almost no notes there. Austin Ekeler was the RB31 in 2024 in full PPR, and that was with Brian Robinson like clearly ahead of him. Ekeler averaged 6.5 carries that season. Like Rashad White is definitely going to have more than 6.5 carries this year. So I do think there's like a low end RB2 path to him. I'm trying to think of like a good comparison to like kind of what last year could be like, you know, like maybe like Jaylen Warren, Ramondre Stevenson, like those guys were like RB2s ish, like in committees, but like they had some clear moments. I think it's going to be hard to go away from despite not having that much money. So I think baseline, I like Catron Allen, day three picks, almost nothing always. And then Bill, I think, is pretty limited. I like him, but I think he's pretty limited. He should be a change of pace back. Maybe like Tony Pollard, Tyjae Spears, Tony Pollard. You can see an outcome right there. Plus, the Commanders have invested a lot into their offensive line. They got both tackle spots figured out. Jaden Daniels obviously has a humongous ceiling. We know about that. So like there is a pathway to them consolidating this, and it's also like a top 10 offense. We just watched this like two seasons ago when he was a freaking rookie. So I like this call.
I think their rushing attack is going to be way more efficient than the quality of their backfield, because if you look last year and the year prior, especially in the games Jaden Daniels played, like we've seen each of Brian Robinson, washed Austin Ekeler, Jeremy McNichols, JCM, Chris Rodriguez, like all of these guys have been efficient running backs. And it's like, either that means that a bunch of total Jags, frankly, are in fact secret top half running backs in the NFL, or just kind of whoever plays next to Jaden Daniels is going to be able to get totally fine efficiency. So I think Rashad White can potentially look way better in this situation than we're used to him looking in Tampa Bay. And again, he just gives you so much more in every other facet of the game that I think JCM doesn't need to just be better. Or Catron, either of them doesn't need to just be better than White as a runner. They need to be like a lot better than White as a runner in order to justify them staying on the field when they have other limitations.
Yeah, the Jaden Daniels sub makes total sense. If you guys have looked at Lamar Jackson teammates, no matter what, whether they're in their prime or not, their best seasons are next to Lamar Jackson. Like that's the same thing with Derrick Henry, who was maybe a little bit past his prime when he signed on with the Ravens, and his numbers are like literally better now than they were in his prime. Same thing with like J.K. Dobbins. All these guys are like fantastic next to dual threat quarterbacks. It makes sense. If you guys have watched any football in your whole life, you can see why this would be the case. Like, not all that surprising. Plus, Rashad White, it's kind of my favorite thing. The best ball community just loves like the same type of players and stuff. When you can find the guy that runs counter to that, like, to me, there's always some hidden value in there because he's not the sexy name. I think that the unsexy names are, you can have some nice hits with that type of profile. I think that's exactly Rashad White. Yeah, I think I'm on team Rashad White over Bill Kroski Mary. I think in really deep leagues, I'm open to Catron Allen, you know, having some value later on. But I think it's going to take a lot for Rashad White. So five good names there. Jacob, tell us what you got for the rest of the summer as we kind of head into the prime of the calendar.
Yeah, you can find all my written work, as always, on Thinking About Thinking, which is jacobsanderson.substack.com. My most recent article up there was taking a deep dive into ambiguous wide receiver and tight end rooms. So with three or more drafted pretty close together in the mid rounds over the last 5 years, what have been the hits? What have been the misses? And then the one I'm working on right now will be applying that to teams like the Bears. We already discussed a little bit, the Jags, the Colts. So a lot of the names we discussed today, plus some more. And I have rankings up there for best ball already. And pretty shortly, I'll be dropping redraft rankings for high stakes and for your home leagues as well. So we'll have you covered all summer.
All right. Awesome. Yeah. Go give Jacob a ton of support here. Like truly one of the best analysts in the game. Do not miss what he's tweeting out on top of that. So we'll be back. I don't know when the rest of this month could be kind of funky. Stay patient. We're going to land the plane here in a little bit, but just, you know, stay patient around here. So like, subscribe, leave a comment, tell us how much you love Underdog and how excited you are about Yahoo, all the fun stuff that the bosses want to hear about. So until next time, I don't know when, have a good weekend. Later.